Hey everyone, I'm Thanos Davelis, and welcome back to our podcast, The Greek Current, for your daily roundup, where we highlight the top stories of the day every afternoon with analysis from guest experts, policymakers, journalists, and HALC staff. Today's Financial Times piece, titled Turkish Intrigue in the Balkans, has brought renewed attention to Ankara's transnational and illegal campaign of extractions and kidnappings of Turkish nationals in other countries. Nate Schenken, who is a director for research strategy at Freedom House, joins us to discuss this campaign by Turkey, which he has been monitoring since 2016, and the broader ramifications of global transnational repression. Nate, welcome to The Greek Current. It's great to have you with us.
Thanks so much. Great to be here.
Nate, you've been tracking Turkey's global purge since 2016, and you noted in the Financial Times piece that I mentioned in our introduction that Turkey has done illegal renditions for more countries in the last 6 years than any other country in the world. Who exactly is Turkey targeting here?
Well, the biggest target are members of the Gulen movement. And obviously, I think as listeners probably know, the Turkish government considers the Gulen movement responsible for the 2016 coup attempt. And that definition of responsibility is very broad. So the way the Turkish government sees it, anyone with an affiliation with the Gulen movement, which can be quite tangential, is culpable. And that's resulted, of course, in Turkey, as many know, in the arrest of hundreds of thousands of people inside of Turkey since 2016, the firing of hundreds of thousands of civil servants, the expropriation of billions of dollars of businesses, and on and on. And this is really the global side of that. This is the global purge to match the domestic purge inside of Turkey. So the vast majority of the people who are being kidnapped are people affiliated with Gulen movement schools, which were distributed globally prior to the coup attempt, and who are being, as the Turkish state says when they announce these kidnappings, who are being wrapped up, packed up, and brought back to Turkey, where they're arrested, prosecuted, and sent to prison.
Nate, you write that this campaign is global, it's overt, and illegal. And in a congressional testimony from 2019, you noted that this involves efforts with Interpol, it involves canceling passports, it involves not renewing passports at consulates across the world, and as you mentioned just now, even kidnappings with citizens that are just taken abroad without any legal process. Can you walk us through how this works exactly? Are there any specific cases that you can highlight for us?
Yes. So Turkey's campaign is very focused on kidnappings, renditions, bringing people back. The tools to get to that stage frequently do involve what we call mobility controls, so revoking especially passports of people who are traveling or who are outside the country. Now, obviously, as anybody who knows who's traveled internationally, you understand that if your passport is canceled and you try to cross a border, you're going to be stopped, right? You might be stopped for an hour. Well, maybe it's clarified. You might be stopped for a day or a week. During that time is often when we see people being targeted then for kidnapping, for rendition to Turkey. Similarly, Interpol notices work the same way. Most people think that Interpol is a police organization that has its own police force. It's not. It's actually just a notification system. And though there are supposed to be standards for vetting those notifications, there's been a big trend globally, not just of Turkey, of authoritarian countries abusing the system to get people detained while they're in transit. So basically, you upload a notice into the system, either a red notice, another kind of notice, or what's called a diffusion request. And those can result in someone being stopped at a border. And again, once they're stopped, you have an opportunity then to go after them. And so a lot of these have taken place exactly through that method, where people are stopped in transit and then held for a time and eventually extracted through illegal means.
Are there any notable cases that you can describe to us?
Well, in the case of a couple of people who were detained at quite lengthy Interpol detentions that took place in August 2017, these were in fact not connected to the Gulen movement and more connected to a bigger pattern of Interpol abuse that includes Turkey. So Doğan Akhanli, Hamza Yalçın, these are both European Turkish writers, so people of Turkish origin, but have gained European citizenship because they left Turkey many decades ago. And they had both been placed on Interpol lists. And they were held, each of them, for over a month in detention in various countries in Europe in that time in August 2017. Similarly, and this is, I think, addressed in the Financial Times article, you have a case of a man who was taken in Albania, initially detained in Albania. He was actually intended to be released from detention because he had served the due sentence for entering Albania with a visa that was not appropriate. But when he was released, he was picked up straight off the street and disappeared and wound up immediately in Turkey. So again, a kidnapping. So these are kind of the classic pattern, really, for what we see.
The Financial Times piece that you were quoted in tracks a string of extractions that took place in Balkan countries, as you mentioned, focusing on this case that took place in Albania. But as we mentioned before, this campaign is global. Data you shared from Freedom House in a graph that appears both in the article and on a thread that you posted on Twitter shows that Turkey has been involved in renditions from at least 17 countries since the failed coup attempt in 2016, including but not limited to Saudi Arabia, Malaysia, Azerbaijan, Pakistan, Indonesia. Why are some of these countries willing to cooperate with Turkey? And is this always happening with the knowledge of the host country?
So I'll take the second one first, which is that, yes, in the Turkish case, the case of the Turkish Transnational Repression Campaign, all of the cases we've studied, there's cooperation. The pattern involves local security services or police who are somehow co-opted into initially detaining people, and then they're handed over to Turkey, whether that's within 12 hours or whether that's within 30 days. Why are people cooperating? The number one reason is that Turkey puts a lot of pressure on people. Turkey is not a superpower, of course, but it's a powerful country. It has a lot of money. It has a strong security industry. It has security cooperation with a variety of countries. And they've really prioritized this since 2016. So there's an enormous amount of bilateral pressure. From what we understand, talking with people who've worked with people who've been targeted or lawyers, there's an enormous amount of pressure on Turkish consulates and embassies in these countries to prioritize the pursuit of nationals abroad. And so this is a real top shelf priority. I would put it in the top one or two things that people are expected to do in these countries. And so the question, of course, is what is Turkey giving up to get these people? We don't get good information about that, of course. But there's lots of, you know, I would say hints, including some that were described in the Financial Times article. There's lots of hints of the kinds of levels of cooperation in terms of infrastructure investment, in terms of building contracts and financial inducements that might have been involved in some of these cases.
In 2017, NBC News and Wall Street Journal reported on an alleged Turkish attempt to get Fethullah Gülen removed from Pennsylvania and brought to Turkey, and that alleged attempt involved former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn and an offer of $15 million. Now, that story raises the question, has Turkey made any attempts to extract people from the United States that you know of?
I'm not aware of any. That doesn't mean, of course, that there hasn't been a desire. I'm sure there is a desire on the part of the Turkish government, of course, to gain control over Fethullah Gülen himself or of other high-level members of the Gülen movement. There's a formal extradition process that the Turkish government, as far as I know, continues with the U.S. Department of Justice. That's been going on since 2016, more or less. That doesn't seem to be going anywhere. And one of the big reasons that doesn't seem to be going anywhere is that Turkey has not done a very good job of documenting or explaining in a way that comports with the rule of law what happened in the coup attempt and why they hold the Gülen movement accountable. That's not to say in my own personal appraisal, I disagree with their assessment. I think the Gülen movement at the top level may have been responsible for certainly a part of the coup attempt, but the Turkish government has definitely failed in terms of presenting a really clear legal case for accountability that would be required for someone like Fethullah Gülen or someone else to be extradited.
Nate, Turkey isn't the only country engaging in this behavior. What other states have you been tracking and are particularly concerned about?
There's a lot of them, dozens of states that we see using physical transnational repression. So what we call, when we say physical, we mean assassinations, kidnappings, assaults, physical intimidation. Some of the top ones that we're worried about: Russia, of course, Iran, China, Rwanda is one of the important ones that isn't, I think, widely discussed enough. And then finally, of course, Saudi Arabia, which is perhaps people are most familiar with in this area because of the murder of Jamal Khashoggi in 2018. But these are six really key countries that use transnational repression as practically a normal tool of state at this point. There isn't a lot of covertness about doing it. You know, so when Turkey kidnaps someone, or when Iran kidnaps someone, or when Rwanda does, they put out a press release. They say, we brought this person back. And it's really clear that they didn't do it through a normal extradition process, through a process that respected the rights of that person. And this is becoming something that's very standard practice for a whole host of countries in which we really need to push back on if we want people to be able to, frankly, be protected outside of countries that they might have fled for fear of persecution.
In a great thread on the topic on Twitter today, you noted that very same thing, that we cannot allow this kind of extraterritorial claim of control over nationals abroad to become normalized or accepted. Have there been any steps from the U.S., for example, or other actors like the European Union to hold countries like Turkey or Saudi Arabia or Russia accountable in this department?
I think we're still in the early days, but we're getting started, is what I would say. There have been steps to improve Interpol. And that's due to really diligent work that's come from civil society groups, especially a group called Fair Trials, that's worked on Interpol reform for, a decade. And there have been improvements. It's still a long way from being perfect, and we see a lot of bad stuff still happen, but it is getting better. There are moves that have taken place in State Department to document transnational repression in the State Department human rights reports that come out every year. And that may seem like a small thing, but it actually is a very important step towards establishing a record and establishing a baseline understanding of who's doing what to whom so that we can act against it. So those are positives. We do still have a long ways to go. There is an issue of holding people accountable in terms of sanctioning, targeted sanctions where necessary for serious human rights violations. There's an issue as well within democracies, right, of how do we protect people? Some of this won't be stopped just by sanctioning people or by holding the perpetrators accountable. It'll have to be stopped by having better protections at home. And we have to do that in a way that builds trust with the communities that are targeted. So Rwandans, Russians, or Chechens who are living in our countries who might not feel safe going to law enforcement about these issues, we have to find a way to build trust with them and make them know that they can be protected in the United States. And then lastly, the one I would add is commercial spyware. Didn't bring this up in the article, I don't think, in Financial Times, but the issue of spyware is one that runs throughout this problem of transnational repression. And a lot of that spyware, so we're talking about very sophisticated softwares that can be used to hack messenger apps and the like, is sold by democracies or by companies based in democracies to these countries. And there have been some steps to try to crack down on that. There's certainly been a lot of bad press around it, especially related to Jamal Khashoggi's murder. But there hasn't been enough. There hasn't been enough steps taken to restrict the export of commercial surveillance software and commercial spyware.
Are there any specific steps that you think should be taken? You've testified before Congress on this issue. Have you included any recommendations for Congress or policymakers?
Yeah, so there's a piece of legislation that was introduced in the last Congress. We'll see, I expect it'll be reintroduced in the coming Congress. It's called the Transnational Repression Accountability and Prevention Act. This bill is really focused on Interpol, so it's on the Interpol component of this, but that is an important part. And that's definitely one that we support and want to see supported. There are bills and there are steps that can be taken to hold the killers of Jamal Khashoggi accountable. That's one case. But the example is very important as the most visible example of transnational repression that everybody understands, and as one that was perpetrated by a U.S. ally, a very powerful U.S. ally, sending a signal that that's unacceptable is a really important way to draw a red line. And doing the opposite, like the outgoing administration did under President Trump, where they sent a signal that it was acceptable, that you could murder with impunity abroad, really does cause problems. So those are kind of two key steps that I think lawmakers and other policy actors in D.C., in Brussels, you know, can move on and can move on fairly quickly.
Freedom House is set to release a new report on this in a couple of weeks. What can you tell us about it?
The new report we have coming out on January 28th is this global look at transnational repression, something we've been working on for a couple of years, something that was actually inspired by when I started examining the Turkish case. It sort of started from Turkey and have been working outward to see who's doing what to whom. The report finds a big global pattern of these cases, and it helps us, I think, understand what exiles and diasporas go through when they're trying to be civically engaged with their countries of origin, and those countries of origin are targeting them. So we really hope that it's going to be a way to mainstream this conversation, to make it something that we all talk about and all understand in a shared way, and that we can then work on solutions towards and begin to do a better job of protecting people who have sought asylum, who've sought refuge in democracies and now need our protection.
Nate, thanks for joining us today on The Greek Current. It was great having you with us.
Thanks for having me so much.
In other news, Greece's Education Minister Nikki Kerameos and Citizens Protection Minister Michalis Chrysochoidis presented a bill to Parliament on Wednesday that intends to set up a police division on campus and limit entrance to university grounds to students, academic staff, employees, and guests. Under the proposed changes, university entrance requirements will also be amended, and time limits will be set for the completion of degree courses. The legislation is an effort to improve the overall quality of higher education and eradicate lawlessness on campuses. A rally in Athens organized to protest the plan resulted in police using tear gas to disperse the crowds. The main opposition party, Syriza, backed the protest and described the proposed reforms as undemocratic. Finally, Turkish Defense Minister Hulusi Akar said it would be very problematic for Turkey to turn back on its purchase of Russian S-400 defense systems, but expressed hope that a dispute with the United States on the issue could be resolved through dialogue. While he appealed to the incoming Biden administration to reconsider U.S. sanctions imposed last month over its purchase of the S-400s, Akar ruled out getting rid of the missiles. Instead, Akar reiterated that Turkey was in talks with Russia on obtaining a second consignment of the S-400s. Turkey's links to Russia have triggered concerns among its NATO allies. That wraps up today's Daily Roundup. Thanks for tuning in.